to the Creative Pen Podcasts. I'm Joanna Penn, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options, internet sales and promotion for your book. The companion website is www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone. This is Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and this is podcast episode number 129, which I'm recording in late May 2012. So today I have a fantastic interview with James Chartrand from Men With Pens about author branding, website mistakes, pseudonyms and gender online, as well as copywriting, because yes, James is actually a woman, and that is just one of the things we talk about. So really interesting interview. But first I wanted to give you a short update from me. I kind of do this sporadically, I know, but I do have a specific question from a listener this week. But first up, I've been really working quite hard on my author branding for jfpen.com, my fiction site, and I've decided that the tagline, my author tagline, is Ancient Mystery, Modern Thrill, which I'm very happy with, and I have to thank my friend, New York Times bestselling author CJ Lyons, who is awesome and has really helped me with trying to understand what exactly kind of makes my books stand out. So I really like Ancient Mystery, Modern Thrill. That pretty much sums up what I like and also what I write about. So I'm happy about that. I've also had a new header designed with Oxford architecture in sort of greys and black and white. So I've spent a lot of time on that, and I've tried a number of different iterations. I've also tried some headshots, and I've written a blog post on headshots and how hard it is to get that right. So I wanted to mention that to you guys, because author branding is something that is really important for a sort of longevity and a career where people are, you know, become fans, and they know what they're getting in a way, and therefore they buy your book with the knowledge that they are going to get a brilliant read. So that's quite exciting. So I'm really happy with that. I've also started a new Facebook page at JF Pen Author. So if you have enjoyed my fiction, I'd love you to pop by, as it's brand new and you know how hard it is to start a Facebook page. Or of course I am on Facebook, The Creative Pen on Facebook, if you want to come and say hi as well. Okay, so feedback from listeners. I really do appreciate all your feedback and on the podcast. And if you do like the podcast, I would really love some reviews on iTunes. That would also help. But I do get emails from people, so thank you for that. You can email me at joanna@thecreativepen.com. So a special shout out today to Graham Dinton, who has been listening to the show for 3 years now, since the very beginning, and who I met in Oxford last weekend. So hello Graham, and I'm always thrilled to meet people in person after so long online, so that was lovely. I also received a thought-provoking email from Matt Dorf. So hi Matt, and thank you for your email. I'm just going to share a few lines from it. Matt says, I really enjoy your podcast. Your interviews are great. You have good guests and ask really excellent questions. Thank you for providing this service. Lovely of Matt to start with a compliment there. But then he does challenge me, which I've really been thinking about. He says, I listened to you talk about your writing, your thriller books and your eagerness to break through to become a brand author. What I don't hear you talking about is your main character. Your character, the person who drives your plots and in whom you want readers to invest their emotion, is ultimately more important than your plot. Well, Matt, I have been thinking a lot on this, and for anybody listening as well, I mean, maybe this applies to you. I guess I came up with Morgan Sierra, my protagonist, a few years ago now, and yeah, it's funny, when you said that, I was like, oh, I really don't talk about her very much. And, you know, if we think about memorable characters like Sherlock Holmes, James Bond, and yeah, I agree, the plots are kind of window dressing. And I also thought of Lee Child's Jack Reacher, who I like a lot, who I want to go meet again in the next book or however. So, yeah, you definitely really helped me with that, Matt. So I'm going to now tell you guys a few things about Dr. Morgan Sierra, who is my protagonist, my heroine in my books Pentecost and Prophecy. So Morgan Sierra was brought up in Israel by her father, who was an archaeologist and later studied the Kabbalah. She did her military service, as all young people do in Israel, and then she remained in the military as a psychologist, specialising in understanding fundamentalist religion and its impact on security. And I mean, that is such a major topic in the Middle East. Her husband, Elian, was actually killed in action on the Golan Heights. And since then, she hasn't really had another long-term relationship. Although there's more of a flicker of attraction with Jake Timber, the arcane agent who becomes her partner. She has a cat, Lakshmi, who she took in as a stray, but really Morgan is quite lonely when she stops to think about it. And that was the cause of some early mistakes in her sort of life in England. But she now lives in Jericho, which is an area in Oxford, and she runs and she's kept up with Krav Maga, which is an Israeli martial art the military use, but there are also clubs here in the UK. And so she's definitely very fit and she can kick people's butts. So that's very, you know, it's important to me for her to have that background in Israel. For a lot of the stuff I write, Israel is very important to me. So after her father died, Morgan actually moved back to England to work at Oxford University researching the psychology of religion and running a small clinical practice. And she also wanted to get to know her sister, Faye. They're actually non-identical twins, separated early in their life when the parents split up. Faye is married to a Christian pastor and they have a daughter, Gemma, and Morgan is a devoted auntie. So Faye and Morgan are basically getting to know each other again. They didn't grow up together, even though they're non-identical twins. And Faye actually looks like their Welsh mother, fair-skinned with blonde hair. And Morgan looks like their Sephardi Jewish father, so dark curls and a Mediterranean complexion. But they both have these sort of stunning blue eyes with a slash of violet through them. And Morgan's in her right eye and Faye's in her left. So although I guess I don't really like talking too much about what characters look like, I wanted them, you know, to be look quite different but with this similar slash in their eyes. But it's also important that Morgan actually isn't Jewish. You know, to be born Jewish, your mother has to be Jewish, and so Morgan's mother is Welsh, but she was brought up in Israel, so she knows a lot about Judaism. So in terms of what drives Morgan, I was thinking about this a lot, and this is really the big question I think we're all looking for in our protagonist. And really Morgan is searching for something beyond the physical, so something metaphysical, I guess. I won't say that she's looking for God, because God is a label and I don't want to put a label on it. She believes in something beyond just what we can see, but she doesn't believe in the Judaism of her father or the Christianity of her sister Faye. So this is part of her attraction to the Arcane Agency, which investigates the supernatural and the space between, you know, what is science and what is spiritual. And you might have guessed that this is part of what drives me as well. And you get the hint of the supernatural in both Pentecost and Prophecy that some may interpret as explainable by science or by faith, but Morgan just finds more questions. So that's probably one of her primary drivers, is also, I guess, finding that knowledge, finding knowledge behind all of that and learning more about the world, and also loyalty. So loyalty to her family and to her friends and to her country. And I mean, for her loyalty is to her home country of Israel. And she will, in Pentecost, she risks everything to rescue Faye and Gemma. And once she joins Arcane, they start to become her family. And revenge for Jake's injuries is actually what's partially driving her in Exodus, as well as a loyalty to Israel, because she will do anything to stop another war breaking out. So yeah, suffice to say, she's a complex character. She's also a kind of, you know, she is my kick-ass alter ego. You may have guessed that. Parts of me are woven into the fictional aspects of the character, and my own questions come through in the books. And I think that that's probably one of the reasons we are writers, isn't it? I mean, that's why we do it, to investigate some of the things that we feel and experience. Okay, that's probably enough about Morgan Sierra, but thanks again to Matt Dorf. And you can email me with any comments or questions anytime at joanna@thecreativepen.com. I love to hear from you, and I will be doing a bit more of this sort of answering questions in the podcast. Okay, let's get into the interview with James Chartrand. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm interviewing James Chartrand. James is the founder of Men With Pens, creating world-class websites and copywriting that bring you business results. So welcome, James.
Thanks very much for having me, Joanna. It's good to talk to you.
Oh no, it's great to have you on the show. So we have to start with the obvious, which is that you're a woman.
I am. There's no mistaking that.
There isn't. Now, authors understand pen names. You know, we talk about them a lot. And James Chartrand is yours. So can you explain the story around how you became James and the impact it had on your business?
I sure can. I'll give you a nutshell version, because it's actually quite a long story and it's been going on for several years. But I'm glad to talk to your audience about it, because you seem to have more authors and novelists in your group. So it's less of an impact. Pen names and pseudonyms are very common in that area of writing. So I think a lot of people are going to understand why I did this. But in the copywriting and the business world, it's not so usual to walk around saying you're a man when you're not. But the thing is, I started out years ago, and I worked at very, very low rates. I had just gotten onto the web, didn't know what I was doing, and I was working on article writing, and I was being paid $2 for about 500 words. Mm. And I decided that I wanted to expand my empire and hire people to work for me, but I'd noticed that it's very women-dominated at the lower levels of writing, and that the people who got the most respect were men. And I also wanted to maintain some anonymity. I didn't want people to know that I, the woman, was hiring other women. So I thought, well, let's just use a pen name and run with that and see what happens. The difference in respect that I got from my peers who wanted to work with me on article writing was pretty impressive. There was no cattiness. There was no bitching. There was no competitiveness. It was very respectful. And that was interesting, because I wondered how clients would treat me. Mm. So for a while, I ran the same pen name and bid on jobs using my pen name. And I would bid on the same jobs using my real name, which is a woman's name. Mm. And the difference was phenomenal. When I was a woman, I would get talked down to. I would get, you know, it was always a question of, your rates are too high. No, we don't like your ideas. They're no good. But when I used my pen name, all of a sudden, no one quibbled with my rates. My ideas were respected. And it was just the credibility factor that you get from using a man's name instead of a woman's was very, very interesting. Mm. And I looked around at all the other people who dominated the copywriting industry, like Brian Clark, Michel Fortin. These people were all men, and I couldn't find one woman in there. So it's just a question of, well, you know, I have kids to feed and a living to make. It's all business for me. This pen name works better for me. I might as well just run with it. And I did.
No, and it's brilliant. And your site, you know, Men With Pens, is, yep, it's quite a masculine, well, one, it's got the word men in, but it's also kind of got masculine colours, hasn't it? I mean, you really have that branding everywhere. Is that something, yeah, you recommend for others?
It was halfway intentional and halfway just personal preference. I tend to be very straightforward. I like those colours. I like that bold, confident feel. So the design was a good fit for who I am as a person. And of course, we didn't want to give the impression that this was a website full of flowers and unicorns and pink daisies, you know, which is, it's not the right association for a business world. So we played down on the feminine side, played up the masculine side a bit, and it worked very, very well.
Mm. So what about the kind of, you know, at the moment everybody talks a lot about authenticity, and I know a lot of people who use pseudonyms who have a problem with that. They really don't know how to be authentic under a pseudonym. Yeah. So what do you think about that?
You know what? No matter what name I've ever used, a name is just a label that we give to something. Take, for example, a sofa, which is also a Chesterfield, which is also a couch. They all mean the same thing, and it's just a label that we use to identify what this object is. Names are the same for people. I could be James, I could be Sarah, I could be Jonas. It doesn't matter. It's just a label that identifies me.
Mm.
So for me, the personality is always constant. The name can be whatever it is, but the person behind it is always the same. So I've never really had an issue, you know, like the pen name doesn't transform me. I don't become someone different. I don't act different. I don't speak different. It's just a word. And I am authentic because the way I communicate, the way I write, the way I act and behave, that is me.
Mm.
So I'm always authentic no matter what name I'm using.
No, fantastic. And then I recently changed my thriller author name to J.F.
Yeah,
Penn.
I heard that.
So I use using initials because they're kind of gender unspecific. But
That's right.
Say I got quite a lot of flack about it.
Really?
Yeah. You know, women should be able to write thrillers under their own name. And of course, some women are, but also a lot of women use initials. So, you know, what do you reckon about the flack we get?
You know what? It's a very interesting it's a very interesting philosophy, and you know, I get where people are coming from. When it was revealed that I was a woman, a lot of people were angry. A lot of women were angry. The men didn't care. Most of them laughed it off and they said, "Ha, great joke. Well done, you. Let's keep it up." You know, all they care about is business and results, generally speaking. The women were very, very, very angry because we already have a hard time as it is. I don't appreciate it when people see me as, you know, a mother working from home or, you know, taking care of my kids. I don't appreciate that perception. And I work hard to stand up and say, I'm a business person. But the reality is, you know, we have a long way to go to reach equality. And it shouldn't matter whether I wear a dress or whether I wear jeans or whether I'm James or whether I'm Lucy. None of this should matter, but the truth is it does.
Mm.
So I think the flack comes from people being hurt within themselves. They're not really angry at you. They're not really angry at me. They're more angry that, damn it, it works. And it shouldn't work. It shouldn't make a difference, but it still does.
Yeah. No, I love that. And it is about business. And so now that's out the way, we've done gender, we'll actually talk about business because, you know, that's what we're really interested in.
Awesome.
So Men With Pens specializes in brilliant website design and copywriting. And of course, in the author world, especially in the fiction world, I think a lot of authors are choosing to use basic WordPress designs or use Facebook pages only as their sort of home on the net. So maybe you could talk about why you think a good website is critical for, you know, for authors as well as, you know, more traditional businesses.
You know what? It reminds me of a couple of my favorite authors. Piers Anthony was one. Ursula K. Le Guin is another. Anne Bishop is another. Like, these are my favorite authors. I've read their works for years. They have terrible websites. They're really ugly. They're really basic. They're clunky. They're made by amateurs. The only reason I don't care is because I feel as if I know these authors personally, but I've also known them for, you know, Piers Anthony has been around since the dawn of time. I think he still is, isn't he? So, you know, new authors today don't have that luxury. If you look at Stephen King's website, he's been around for a long time too. He's very famous too, but he understands that he has competition out there. His books are on the shelves with a lot of other people's books that are just as good, maybe even better. And he can't ride on his laurels as much as he thinks he can. he's put effort into building a better website. It's still not bang zoom, but it's still pretty damn good. And he gets involved with his readers. This is where I think most authors today kind of fail. They want to write a book, and that's great. And when the book comes out, they're all proud. But you still need to get readers to want to read your book, to want to get to know you, to want to be involved with you. And if they can't find you on the web, and if they do find you and what they find is horribly ugly, why would they buy your book? If they can't engage with you on social media, if they can't have a quick chat with you on Facebook, why would they feel that they can get to know you like we know Pierce Anthony, who has become a dinosaur? In, you know, you need to have a personal connection. And the only way to build that personal connection online is to have a good web presence, is to get involved with social media, is to get out there and connect with your readers in a very personal way and bring them back to reading your works so that they will buy the books, so that they'll read them, enjoy them, and tell their friends. And that's essentially what I feel most authors today are, you know, like I said, they've got this book that they've worked so hard to create. I know how much work goes into that book. And they just let the rest go. The other advantage, Chris Guillebeau recently put out his book, The $100 Startup. He mentioned that it was very easy for him to get a deal with his agents and publishers because he had a website, because he had built up a fan group and following, because he had this online platform that was ready and prepared. It was very easy for agents and publishers to turn around and say, you've done half the marketing work. This is awesome. You've got a deal.
No, absolutely. And, you know, that's definitely very true. So a lot of authors now have jumped into some kind of website, but often it's quite basic. So could you maybe say, what are the three worst mistakes you see people making on their amateur websites or their amateur blogs, I guess?
One of the worst is a bad choice of colors. This is something that I feel is consistent with authors and fiction sites. Every time I visit one that I know isn't working well, the first thing I notice is the colors are absolutely horrible. I've seen websites that are an odd olive green with brown text. I mean, that's not something that makes me want to engage and connect with you, versus someone who has a fresh, bright, modern look with, you know, some white and a little splash of red or orange. That's engaging. That's fun. That looks alive. Looking alive, looking like someone is there and active, even if it's just a website, that can give the impression that the author is doing well, is healthy, and is present. And that comes from, you know, a good color choice that shows this person is not drab and dreary. This person, you know, isn't colorblind. This person understands that blue and black are probably not the best colors when you want to talk about a book that's about going out there and making change. You know, there's a lot of color associations that people make, and I think that is one of the hugest mistakes I can see. Another huge mistake is thinking that the fiction will speak for itself, the book will speak for itself, and that the author doesn't have to say who he is, what the book is about, where they can get it. They actually forget that they are pitching and trying to sell, and they think that the book will just sell itself. It can't. Nobody's read it yet. All they see is maybe a cover design. Otherwise, people need information. They've landed on a site. They want to know why this book matters. Why is it interesting? Why should they read it? Why should they pick it up? Why should they give them their dollars? So those pages are important, and sadly, they're always lacking on the website. So those are two big areas. You'd ask for three, and I'd have to dig a little bit more, but I think those are the biggest ones. Authors don't treat their books like a business. They put their heart into it, but heart needs a solid foundation so that it can grow and keep going.
No, that's fantastic. And I'm really fascinated in the colour thing, because I just did not know you were going to say that. You know, I kind of thought, I kind of know, I've been doing a lot of research, I kind of know some things, and yet colour is something that I hadn't really thought about. Do you have any, can you talk any further about that as a, as, you know, with branding? You know, like I said, your site looks masculine
to
me.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a whole area. It's actually called color psychology. And, you know, big companies invest a lot of money in figuring out what colors affect people and how they affect people and what mood that creates. And perception and mood are directly parts of branding. So let's say, Joanna, I see you as someone who is vivacious and young and a go-getter and driven. The color psychology behind that isn't going to bring me towards something like brown or gray or green.
Mm.
You know, you want colors that reflect you. You want colors that reflect your book. Let's say your book is a deep, dark mystery. Well, then you're going to want to reflect that. So you might choose some smoky grays and blacks with a touch of red. That's part of branding, and that creates a perception and an impression on anyone who lands on your website. So it's very, very important to think about these things really carefully, because you only have 2 seconds. Someone will land on your site and say, oh my God, that's ugly, and leave. Mm. Or they'll say, wow, this looks cool. What is this? And yeah, then they'll stay.
Okay, so let's take an example of somebody, an author who's got maybe 5 books, and they've all got different book covers. You know, they kind of stand alone. How do people how do people think about an overall brand as opposed to a book brand?
In that case, I would say, you know, most authors who have several different works and several different types of works, it might be better to brand themselves. I know Richard Morgan is a writer that I read, and I found him because he was in the fantasy sci-fi section. But I realized after that that's not his main line of writing. I believe, though I might be wrong on this, that he does murder mysteries. So it's like these are two wildly different types of books, and they're going to have wildly different types of covers. I think the fantasy ones have swords and knights in shining armor, and the mystery ones obviously have a mystery design. If I were Richard, and I have not seen his website, I would play up himself as being the brand.
Mm.
You know, have pictures of himself on the website, colors that reflect who he is. Maybe he's deep, dark, and mysterious. Maybe he's fun and bright and light. The branding would go towards him and off the books a little bit, which is good because it makes him look more successful than perhaps he is. He might be a nobody, but by playing himself up, he looks like somebody. Mm. Or maybe he really is somebody huge. In that case, it's important to stand forth and you know, put a picture of yourself right up there.
Yeah, and you made a really good point there, which is you might not be anybody, but you can look like somebody on the internet, can't you? It's a very weird place. You can look bigger than you actually are.
It's crazy how quickly you can influence people's perception of who you are. And I wrote about this on Jonathan Field's blog once upon a time, and I had said, you know, take an example of a guy walking down the street. Let's say he has torn jeans and dirty shoes and there's a hole in it and his hair is all crazy and he's muttering to himself. Your instant thought would be, oh my God, lock the doors, there's a hobo, you know, walking past.
Hmm.
But let's say he goes inside his house, takes a shower, fixes his hair, puts on a $2,000 suit, snazzy shoes, and walks by again. Your instant perception would be, wow, that guy looks like someone successful. I wonder if he's a lawyer.
Mm.
You don't know who that person is. How he dressed himself instantly influenced your perception of who he was. And he might be that hobo who got lucky and found a suit in the garbage. He might be that lawyer who decided to play a practical joke. You'd never know.
Mm.
And that's what website design and your online platform can do for you when you're an author, when you're a business person. Now, I will say a caveat. I don't think it's smart for anyone to pretend to be someone that they're not. But you can definitely play up your best qualities and make them shine through terrifically and create that instant perception of, you know what, I'm someone. I may not have a big following. I may not have tons of readers and fans. I may not be rich. But boy, I wrote a really great book. I am someone. Play up that. Why not?
No, that's fantastic. So that's a lot about the imagery, I guess, on a website. But you're also a copywriting expert. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because, you know, my listeners to the podcast, they're all writers, but that doesn't mean they know what copywriting is or how it differs from writing a book. So maybe you could start by explaining that.
There's a huge, huge difference. And, you know, I'm glad I talked to you about this because I have written fiction extensively. So I know what goes into fiction writing, and I know what goes into copywriting, and they're worlds apart. They're worlds different. Fiction is very much a story, always a story, always about entertainment, dialogue, characterization, things like that. Copywriting is about selling a message, and not necessarily selling for dollars either. If you want to write a note to your husband to ask him to clean up the lawn, that could be copywriting. If you want to write an email to your publisher asking, you know, could she take a look at this new draft, that could be copywriting. These are ways to influence people through words, and it uses a lot of consumer psychology, marketing, and sales blended in to just writing, and it turns your message into something that compels people to take an action. Doesn't matter what that action is. Could be to hit the buy now button and get that book, or it could be something as, could you please open this email? It's really important to you and to me.
Mm. And so some people listening will be kind of saying, oh, you used the word influence, and does that make me as kind of a sleazy salesperson? Does it have to be that way?
Well, you know what? When I want my husband to clean up that yard, I don't think that batting my eyelashes and being sweet to him and making a nice supper is being a sleazy salesperson. That's just me being really good at selling my idea that cleaning up the yard would be a really awesome thing to do. There's a lot of confusion about what sales, influence, persuasion means. And as far as I'm concerned, I stay well away from being, there are distasteful ways of selling, and it, usually people get that perception that it's distasteful when it's been done badly. When you see a really great commercial on TV that makes you think, hey, I should look that up on the web, they've done a really good job of influencing you in a way that makes you feel comfortable. And I think that's really important is to do things in a way that makes other people feel comfortable. If they feel uncomfortable, you've done a bad job of influencing them. If they feel comfortable and happy about it, well, you've done a great job.
Mm. And I guess for people listening, if they're still unsure, you know, we're talking for a fiction author, for example, about back blurb, about writing, you know, the product description on Amazon, or even a blog post can be copywriting, can't it?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, those are literally product descriptions, and that's the realm of ad copy and copywriting and sales copy. And, it's not enough to just give people a hint of the story. You have to engage them, interest them, influence them, and persuade them that the description you've written, the summary you've written of your book compels them to actually buy it and read it. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Like, if you have something good to offer people, why wouldn't you want to talk about it?
Mm, absolutely. And I can highly recommend your blog and also Copy Blogger for people to go and have a look at, and I'll include some links in the show notes.
Awesome.
Yeah, so you also mentioned that you write fiction, which is awesome, and you have a book on creating characters as well on your site. So how does
how does
fiction writing fit into your life and, you know, and your business right now?
When I first came online, I had actually come online about a year earlier. I had read an article in the Girl Guides of Canada magazine where they were talking about places where you could write creative fiction as a group and do a continual storytelling, which people know today as a role-playing game. You create a character, you go on, you write it your little chunk of the story. Someone else writes the next bit, and it's a never-ending story that goes on just for fun. So I started there, and it was a friend of mine at the time who said, well, you're a really good writer. Why don't you see if you can get paid for it? So I already had a background in fiction writing from that. I role played for several years at Men with Pens. If you dig in the archives, you'll actually find that I had launched a role playing creative writing site and marketed it through Men with Pens and encouraged people to come and play with fiction, because I believe fiction writers make really great copywriters.
Wow.
Johnny Truant is actually one of them. Johnny Truant is fantastic at copywriting. He's a pro blogger, like his posts get read all the time, and he writes fiction, and his background is from fiction first, not copywriting first.
Yes, we should. I should say there that our very last podcast interview, the one before yours, is Johnny Truant.
Oh, there you go. Good timing, eh?
So that's brilliant. So I guess, you know, are you going to take fiction forward then? Is that something you're going to pursue more?
Oh, you know what? People ask me for that often. I was doing Shane Arthur's Creative Copy Challenge, and I would do it with a fiction slant and write little bits of story. He's been asking me for a long time, write a book. And it's always in the back of my mind. Like, I think I would like to write something fiction for fun for myself. But it's one of those, well, do I really have the time to invest in that? How much does it matter to me? How much do readers care? You know, like, if I'm only writing that for one person and that one person is myself, it's maybe not worth my time at this point. Maybe when I become as old as Piers Anthony, I might sit down and decide to write that fiction novel.
Yeah, and probably under another name as well. Brilliant. So where can people find you and your work?
You can go to www.menwithpens.ca. for Canada and not .com. There's a great group of guys who are fiction writers at the .com address. You might want to go and check them out. They're hilarious. There's a picture of about 16 Scottish guys with their little fiction novel. But I'm at the .ca site, and I have an extensive blog there. There's a search bar. If you put fiction writing in the search bar, you will actually find a lot of articles that I've written about fiction writing and authoring. So that's interesting. And I also have a writing course called Damn Fine Words at damnfinewords.com, and that's where I teach people effective writing skills, which would be perfect for authors, because they'll learn how to write their pitches and crafts and product description in a way that compels people to buy their books.
Fantastic. Well, thanks ever so much for your time, James. That was great.
You're very welcome, and thanks for having me. And if anyone has any questions after the podcast and you have a comment section, I'm happy to dip in and answer any of them there.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You can get more information on writing, publishing options, sales, and promotion for your book at www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And you can also get your free How to Be an Author workbook at www.howtobeanauthor.com. See you next time!